From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. It was California's original highway, El Camino Real, linking the old Spanish missions of the late 18th and early 19th centuries. It stayed a dusty byway until 1912, when a peninsula stretch of the old King's Highway gained the distinction of becoming the first paved section of highway in California. Today, El Camino is neither dusty nor distinctive, a jumble of stop-and-go traffic moving past not very memorable buildings. But it still links 19 cities up and down the peninsula, and there are big plans to turn it into a grand boulevard. Revitalizing El Camino, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. El Camino runs the length of the peninsula from Daly City to San Jose, 47 miles of roadway linking 19 separate communities. Originally, of course, it linked the state's old Spanish missions, and 100 years ago, it became the state's first section of paved highway. But its storied past can't obscure its less than glorious present. El Camino today is a hodgepodge of mostly indistinct buildings and commercial developments. Old theaters and bowling alleys are as likely to be boarded up as booming with new business. But El Camino retains a unique attribute. It runs through San Mateo and San Carlos, Burlingame and Belmont, connecting communities up and down the peninsula. And a new initiative is seeking to turn El Camino into a grand boulevard, a bike and bus-friendly throughfare surrounded by tasteful retail developments and high-density housing. The story of El Camino, in many ways, is the story of California. And where El Camino will head next is the focus for this first hour of Forum. Joining us, Russell Hancock, president and CEO of joint venture Silicon Valley Network and co-chair of the Grand Boulevard Task Force. Russell Hancock, good morning.
Thank you.
Happy to have you join us. Kevin Connolly joins us as well, transit planning manager for Santa Clara Valley Transportation Authority, which is an agency that's a member of the task force as well. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning.
Joining us too, Corinne Goodrich, Manager of Strategic Development for San Mateo County Transit District and Program Manager for the initiative. Corinne, good morning.
Good morning.
And joining us by phone this morning, Dina Belzer, President of Strategic Economics and Urban Economics Consulting Firm, which has been consulting with the Grand Boulevard Initiative as well. Dina, good morning.
Good morning.
Happy to have all of you join us. I want to start with a little bit of word association. So, Russell Hancock, if I say El Camino, you say?
Ugly.
that's pretty succinct.
Look, this is a really dynamic region, but that road does not reflect our region's dynamic profile. It's a hodgepodge of crazy stuff.
Kevin Connolly, your word association.
I guess my word is a number, which is 1962, which I think is, from my perspective, Santa Clara Valley. That's about its era, and it's never changed since then.
Uh-huh. So it's sort of stuck. If you drive down El Camino today, it looks as 1962.
Right. It's in a Mad Men era, but not the cool part of the Mad Men era.
Okay. Corinne Goodrich, your word for El Camino.
Opportunity.
Huh. So stuck in 62, but opportunity for 2012?
I think we have to look at it as it parallels our Caltrain line, our BART line. It carries more traffic than any other arterial in these counties. And so I see it as opportunity.
Okay. Dina Belzer.
Transforming.
Well, let's talk about how you then go about that business of transforming. If your word for El Camino today, Russell Hancock, is ugly, what's the word you'd like to have it transformed to?
Livable, appealing, dynamic.
And what are the key ingredients to making that happen?
Well, the first thing is to simply gather all of the people who have anything to do with this road and its ongoing development. They've never been gathered before, and I think that's the major contribution of this task force that we've created, is to get everybody in the same room, to build a common framework, to put the priorities on the table, to make assessments, and then to work together collaboratively across all of these boundaries and at every level of government. And this road really is tangled up in many layers of government, and so it takes somebody that's creating that framework and then agitating, being a powerful force of advocacy. And that's happening.
Well, let's talk about the challenge that's involved with that. So how many, just for starters, how many units of government, how many agencies have to be connected to make this idea work?
Well, I'll begin by pointing out that there's 19 cities, and they all, of course, exercise veto power over anything that happens on the road. Then there is county government, which comes into play on many segments of the road. Then you have the regional agencies. The one that would be most relevant in this case would be the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, which programs a lot of funds, transportation planning money, studies, all of the rest. It also programs state and federal money. Then the next governmental body that we have to talk about is the State Department of Transportation, Caltrans. Let's not forget, El Camino is actually a state highway. It's known as State Highway 82. So anything that happens on that road has to be sorted out by the state legislature and the Department of Transportation. And then finally, there are federal players that have a lot of relevancy to these kinds of urban arterials.
Honestly, it sounds like an impossible task, Corinne. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you go about coordinating that number of entities to create this grand boulevard? Sounds like a dream.
No, actually, we've been successful because we've created kind of a big tent, a forum where everyone is on the same level. So it's nobody's table. We're all there together. And what we rely on is that every player is going to do their part.
Well, let's talk about how that would actually work. Take the two of you in the studio here. You are working with SamTrans, San Mateo County Transit. Kevin Connolly, you with Santa Clara Valley Transportation Authority, separate entities. How do you get that to work? I mean, so because right now one bus just goes up to the county line around Palo Alto, Menlo Park, mm-hmm. and the bus stops, right? And then you got to change to a different bus. I mean, that in and of itself is part of the problem, right? So how do you make that work? How are you going to have a coordinated system so that you don't have to be changing bus lines as one specific?
You know, that's a question that probably would take almost an entire hour just to answer. And I'll say that after the hour, you'll be just as frustrated as I think everyone in transit has been with that question. But I think that, you know, I agree with Corinne in the sense of it starts small and it starts with the big picture, and then we can work towards implementation. And implementation is really where the rubber hits the road, literally, with bus service. And it's a matter of financing and fiscal issues, which is how do we have fiscal arrangements between counties, because these are fiscally funded at the county level, distinct government entities. And that coordination is always a significant challenge.
We'll start then with describing what you'd like to see happen. As I understand it, one of the ideas would to make El Camino more livable would be to have a through line, right? To have a bus that could go right on through in a high speed or high occupancy lane that would just buzz right through the divide between Menlo Park and Palo Alto. What would that feel like? What would that provide? How would that transform El Camino?
Well, okay, I'll take this, but at Santa Clara Valley VTA, we've proposed to do what we call bus rapid transit. And just for the benefit of the listeners out there, bus rapid transit is, in a word, a sentence, is giving all the benefits of light rail to a rubber-tired vehicle. So it would have its own lane to operate in. It would bypass traffic. It would have a station that's similar to a light rail station and really provide sort of a premium type of service above and beyond just local bus.
And is this one system that runs from Daly City to San Jose?
The proposal has been just for Santa Clara County thus far. And it's really – that goes back to the sort of balkanized nature of our transit agencies. Santa Clara County is sort of much more advanced in their planning than San Mateo County in terms of the transit, and that's probably a byproduct of the fact of where our funding – we have more funding for that than San Mateo County does.
But this is something, Corinne, you'd like to see so that it could get the Daly City to Menlo Park chunk?
Absolutely, but I think what you have to remember is that those bus trips are going to be the kind of 4 to 6 mile trips on bus rapid transit. If you talked about something going all the way, that would be Caltrain.
Right.
I think that our vision ultimately, and I know this is our general manager, Mike Scanlon, is that there would indeed be one bus line that went the whole length.
And how key is this, Russell Hancock first and then Dina Belzer, to have that sort of through fare so that it really is a sense of connectedness? Describe what that would provide and why that is central to your vision for what El Camino might become.
Well, the point here is that regular folks out there, users, citizens, they don't care about dotted lines on a map. They could care less that the San Francisco Creek is the boundary between these two counties. They don't want to get off the bus, get onto another one to continue their journey. So consumers don't care about this. And we're also frustrated to hear that that an answer to this question would take an hour on a program. We think these things should be easy. There's nothing stopping us except ourselves. You can create joint powers authorities. You can create agreements between multiple counties. It has to be worked out at higher levels of government.
How close are you to doing that?
We're making progress.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that for the first time in history, we have two counties working together, agendizing these issues, having all of the people in the room. That's never happened before.
And Dina Belzer, what would you add to that? You used the word transforming to start with. That's a pretty big thing to try to transform the way in which governmental entities work together.
Right. Well, I think ultimately the citizens of San Mateo and Santa Clara County are going to start to demand this kind of transit service because we see many people moving up and down the peninsula to live and work. And so I think over time, more and more people are going to want to be able to take advantage of these transit opportunities. The other thing about San Mateo County in particular is it has an aging population. And so if San Mateo County can facilitate the opportunity for people who are now living in single-family homes to move into new units along the El Camino and use the rapid bus and or the train to get back and forth, this frees up the single-family homes for younger families to raise children in the peninsula. So we have a whole ecosystem here, essentially, that involves both the land use and development of the land along the El Camino, but also works in a synergistic way with the different kinds of transit opportunities that would be provided between Caltrain and the rapid bus.
Dina Belzer, president of Strategic Economics, an urban consulting firm working with the Grand Boulevard Initiative. I want to get to the other aspects of what El Camino, a transformed El Camino, might look like in terms of housing and retail. But just staying with transportation for a moment, what else would be distinctive about the way El Camino might look and feel and be something that makes it more usable for people beyond bus? Is this also something that's going to involve make it more pedestrian-friendly, more bike-friendly? How else would El Camino change? Corinne?
Yeah, exactly. VTA and its BRT plans would widen sidewalks, would make it much more pedestrian-friendly, transit-friendly. And we're doing the same things in San Mateo County, designing different segments to become what's called a complete street.
Is some of this just the look of it, Russell? I mean, right now it's not very – you don't really want to go for a walk along El Camino, at least in the part of the peninsula that I'm familiar with. Is this just to make it more – just visually more appealing?
Absolutely. Aesthetics are really important, and there's guidelines that we can follow on all future development on the road, and we hope that the cities will do that. It was designed just to get throughput. It's a state highway. They're just trying to get as many cars through there as possible. That's all they were thinking about. In all of the planning thus far, they've just thought about this road as if it were a state highway. We need to change our thinking. It needs to be treated as an urban arterial, which means it has to have all of these other amenities, which is wide street sidewalks, also safety islands in the middle, trees planted in the median. Street furniture, bricked in crosswalks, all of these kinds of things that make it feel safe, appealing, and attractive.
I remember a number of years ago when then San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom went to Chicago, and he came back saying, Chicago's got really attractive streets. They're like flower boxes.
Right.
And it was this whole aesthetic appeal. And I think sometimes here in the Bay Area, we think we're so ahead of the game. But in fact, we're not in some ways. Is Chicago a model for this?
It is a model. I want to say that Europe is also a model. all of us who go to Europe are in love with the boulevards in these great cities. And I'm not just talking about Rome and Madrid and London. I'm talking about any European city. They take this approach. They care about these things. They have design sensibilities. It's a priority for their decision makers. And they put their money where their mouth is. In the United States, we've never been that way. We've always been functional, efficient, just get the thing built, do it fast, do it in the way that's most economical. Now that we're built out, we've become a dense urban kind of society, it's important for these aesthetic considerations to come to the forefront. And that's happening. It's happening through Grand Boulevard. But I want to point out one last thing, which is the problem here is that it's a state highway. And so we don't actually have jurisdiction, authority, or the wherewithal to do anything. We can't even plant a tree on El Camino Real because state highway guidelines don't allow for it.
Let me make sure I understand that. So if the city of Mountain View in your county, Kevin, says, you know, we've got some money here. We're going to plant these nice trees along the median. Can't do that because they don't have authority over that because it's a state highway. Is that right?
Yeah, if it doesn't meet Caltrans standards, Russ is exactly right. Caltrans would be opposed. Now, there is a process. Caltrans is all about process. So you can go through a process for a design exception and make the case that the trees would make sense and would not interfere with traffic. And that's a Caltrans decision at that point. And that's a lot of largely what we're talking about in terms of transforming the street. As long as Caltrans remains a player, Caltrans has to be on board with the idea that they're going to change the way their standards are in this case.
So would that be the biggest single – if you think about steps that can make this vision of a different kind of El Camino real, would the first one be sort of offing the state?
Well, that would be one strategy, absolutely. We could say relinquish the road. Just turn it over to the localities and let them assume full responsibility for the road. That's a really interesting question. Some communities want to do that. San Jose did that on their stretch of El Camino, which is called the Alameda. So that's one approach. The second possible approach is to leave it with the state but reclassify the road. Let's not treat it like a highway. Let's not treat it as if it was 101 or 280. Let's treat it as a classification unto itself, which is a key urban arterial that has to meet multiple functions, not just automobile throughput.
Russell Hancock, president and CEO of joint venture Silicon Valley Network. He's also the co-chair of the Grand Boulevard Task Force. We're going to open up our phone lines in just a moment and love to hear from you. If you live on the peninsula, live along the El Camino, how would you like to see it changed? What aspects of El Camino are you most interested in seeing transformed? Is it to create a through line for that buses could move along rapidly? Is it with bike and pedestrian traffic? What about housing developments and retail changes? How would you envision a new El Camino for the peninsula linking up the 19 communities along the way over that 47-mile stretch? Here's the number if you want to start joining our conversation. We'll open up our phone lines in just a moment. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Let's talk about the connection between transportation and housing and retail. Dina Belzer, do all these things fit together? I mean, is the goal here to have housing that's integrated in with transportation and retail so that these things fit together?
Yes, absolutely. Having more people live along the corridor will help stimulate a vibrant retail economy, and it will also, again, contribute to the walkability and the livability of the boulevard. And then, of course, if people can live there and either own one car or no cars as opposed to two or three cars per household, that will also help. So this is why all these things go together. Now, a lot of people think that if you're adding new housing near transit, it has to be very dense. And what we're trying to help people understand is that the transformation that could occur is already occurring along the boulevard in a way that can fit in with the character of the existing communities along the peninsula. So we're not trying to remake the Grand Boulevard into something it isn't, but we're just trying to make it what it is, only better.
How, Corinne, will that work with – I mean, we're familiar with the idea of sort of transit hubs around sometimes Caltrain stations, BART stations. Is that similar to what would happen perhaps along the El Camino, tied in with sort of these new bus rapid transit stops?
That's exactly what we envision. Is we call it nodes and segments in planning terms, but that your rail stations in particular would be nodes, and other major intersections would be nodes where you would have higher density development.
Describe what those would look like. I mean, are we talking big high-rise apartments?
No. In fact, Dina did a study for us that showed that we could accommodate even the highest levels of projected growth from the regional projections in 40 dwelling units to the acre, 3 to 4 story development. So, no. And there are cities that do have plans for higher density.
There's sort of it seems to me sometimes there's sort of a fear of height along the peninsula. In the community where I live, Menlo Park, there's always, we can't have anything higher than like 3 stories. Is that something we have to get away from, Russell Hancock?
I, for one, am not afraid of height. I think we have to reconcile ourselves to this. I live in Palo Alto, so I'm totally familiar with this. In fact, very controversial proposal right now for the downtown right there on El Camino. Interesting to see how that plays out. But if we're serious about our housing needs, El Camino has to be the solution. I mean, this is the logical place to densify. And the best way to densify is by going vertical. And when we go to Europe, again, people love Europe. They always admire the design decisions that are made there. They admire the quality of living. We can have that. We can have that right here on the peninsula. I think it would complement the Silicon Valley lifestyle that we set out.
And these things then, Kevin, though, have to go hand in hand. If you're going to get denser in terms of housing, then transit has to be there or it's a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the transit often gets sort of vilified as, you know, the reason why we're densifying is to assist transit or something like that. And I think we've done, in a lot of the studies that have been done for the Grand Boulevard Initiative going back almost 5 years, they basically conclude that you can densify and you can have better development, and or you can do transit in a more premium type of level like we're talking about here. But they really don't start to work unless they're both happening together. Mm-hmm. And so if you're going to raise the bar in terms of your development style and development kind of program, you should also raise your bar in terms of your transit as well as your other modes. Bike lanes, we didn't talk that much about, but bike lanes and sidewalks and everything, that's when we really start to see a change. We start to see a change in terms of development style as well as greenhouse gas emissions, which we haven't talked enough about here, but that's another area that everybody has a goal in, sort of reducing our vehicle miles traveled and having people choose alternative modes.
It reminds me of the fact that when I drive along the Central Expressway heading south and I see your light rail line, it often, and the transit stops, it doesn't look terribly well used. So is that an example of how these things have to happen together? It doesn't make much sense to have slick light rail unless you've got big housing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think if there's ever a testament to build it and people won't come, it's the VTA light rail system. In the sense that, you know, we have built a very expensive, $1 billion investment in terms of rail, and with the expectation that development would follow along. But development really hasn't followed along in the 25-year history of the VTA light rail. We have plans to change that. You know, I will put that in there.
And we'll come back and talk about the more and the way in which these things are all interconnected and take your calls. Lots of calls coming in about how you'd like to see El Camino change in the future. 866-733-6786 is our number. 866-733-6786. What would you like El Camino to look like in the years ahead? You can also post your thoughts on our website or email us at forum@kqed.org. More on El Camino when we return. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, El Camino, its past, and more urgently, its future. What will this once noble road look like as we move into the next decade of the 21st century? Something called the Grand Boulevard Initiative is trying to make some headway on that front so that this road that links the 19 cities up and down the peninsula, all 47 miles, will have a sustainable future, will look like a place that we would like to spend time on rather than avoid. Some comments coming in on our website. website. El Camino is one of those things I suggest everyone avoid when visiting the Bay Area. It's mile after mile of stop and start, and unsynchronized red lights. I hear everyone making that comment about the unsynchronized red light. Joseph writes in, though, on the other hand, ugly is too strong a word to describe El Camino. Some stretches are average, but others are quite nice. It would be a shame if money were thrown at this non-problem when there are so many legitimate financial problems facing our region. Russell Hancock, how do you respond to this being a non-problem that we shouldn't spend too much money on?
Well, it's nice of your emailer to point out that El Camino has to be understood in context. And of course, we're not here to do that today. We're here to talk about El Camino. And there is going to be transportation money, and there are going to be planning resources that are going to be channeled into this road. And so we want to talk about the most strategic way to do that. If you want to talk about fiscal cliff and, you know, how this all fits into the bigger picture, we can do that. It's probably another show.
But if you were to make the argument that this is central to how you see Silicon Valley and the rest of the peninsula developing, would you see El Camino as being really key to that?
I do, and here's why. People come to Silicon Valley and they're astonished that there's nothing to look at. it's interesting that we're not much to look at here in our region. And the reason employers care about it, the reason people like me at Joint Venture Silicon Valley care about this is because our best strategy as a region to compete for the best and the brightest from all over the world is to build a fabulous region, a region that works, a region that is attractive, that's appealing, that's especially appealing to the creative class, the young people. And the way you do that is you build great communities and you have fabulous urban design. And you have to elevate it to the level of priority, not afterthought, but priority. And this is how regions stay vibrant and competitive. If we don't think about these things, we lose.
Let's go to our calls. Kirsten, the mayor of Menlo Park, joins us. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. Good morning. My name is Kirsten, and it's great to hear this panel. I'm happy to be on the Grand Boulevard Initiative working with all of you. I just wanted to make a comment that part of what the Grand Boulevard Initiative does is help communities develop new specific plans for their communities. So, for example, in Menlo Park, we just developed our specific plan for El Camino and Santa Cruz Avenue, and we incorporated many of the visions in the Grand Boulevard Initiative, such as the wider sidewalks and the higher density housing located within a half mile of the Caltrain station. And I think another person called in about an email about the Stanford projects. There are a lot of projects in Menlo Park and Palo Alto by Stanford that are being proposed right now, and people are concerned and want to talk about it and have input on it. And one of the things that I would like to see is more additional housing on El Camino close to our Caltrain station on those Stanford-owned sites.
And Mayor, are these things happening soon, the wider sidewalks? Is that something that people who live in your community will experience in the near future?
Well, I think you can talk to the panel about this too, but it will take place as developments take place.
I'm not sure what that means. It'll take place as developments take place.
As each project comes online on El Camino, let's say the Stanford property, which is Menlo Park near the San Francisco Creek. When those properties come about to be redeveloped, then that's when you'll see the changes that take place.
Okay, Mayor, thanks so much for calling in. Dina Belcher, then, is the while we think of it as this single initiative, the Grand Boulevard Initiative, in truth, these will be happening sort of community by community, 19 at a time?
That's right. I think it's very important for people to understand that this is an incremental effort. And that individual cities will be responsible for making their own choices. So as the earlier comment about there are good parts of the corridor now and bad parts that do need work, I think that's absolutely right. And the resources will be targeted towards places that need the most help. But I would also suggest that we can think about this transformation of the Grand Boulevard in the health metaphor as sort of preventative medicine, of if we don't invest the money in really improving this area now, in the long run, it's going to cost us more because our cities will be struggling with the higher cost of maintaining places that have no economic vibrancy. Whereas if we invest, then these places will start to generate revenue for the cities, in addition to accomplishing things like, as Kevin said, reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So we really have to work on this transformation to generate a long-term economic benefit as well as other kinds of benefits for our region. And if we don't invest now, we're going to really it's going to cost us more in the long run.
Dina Belzer, president of Strategic Economics, which is a consulting firm working on this initiative as well. You wanted to say earlier, Corinne, that Dina mentioned sort of health benefits. You find that to be true literally if it encourages people to walk.
Yes. Two of our great partners in this are both county health departments. And what I've learned is that 70% of your health outcomes are related to your environment. We have an obesity epidemic in the United States that is projected to get worse. And, you know, one way to address that is to have people walk more and have a more active lifestyle. And that's what we're advocating.
Kevin Conley?
Yeah, I just wanted to pop in real quick about in reference to the point that the mayor made, as well as Dina, about the sort of piece by piece and piecemeal improvement of the boulevard. And I think this is where one area where you see a distinction between the two counties, in the sense of Santa Clara County, through the transit project, is the transit project is bringing $250 million to the table to not do it piecemeal, but to do it all in one, to really improve and transform the corridor in one massive project. And that's a 17-mile improvement. And that's the transit money is a benefit for transit, improves transit, but the transit money is really a catalyst to help all the other improvements occur, the landscaping and the sidewalk and all that. And, you know, I mean, Santa Clara County just has the advantage over San Mateo in terms of more locally.
Why is that?
Well, because of Silicon Valley, because of iPads.
Okay.
And it's basically retail sales tax funds transportation
and
in the
describe
Bay Area.
Just briefly, if you would, Kevin, that 17-mile improvement is going to be what? What will people in Santa Clara see?
Well, as of today, and this is still the ongoing process, but we have proposed, the Valley Transportation Authority, we've proposed to sort of have a transformative type of arrangement where you have a dedicated bus lanes in the center of the street. Now, the part of that that's radical, that's hard for people to swallow, is it takes away a lane for autos. So it goes from a three-lane street in either direction to a two-lane street in either direction. But that middle lane is now transit lanes as well as bike lanes and widening of sidewalks.
And how long – what's the timeline on that? What decisions have to be made? What will need to be resolved before that becomes a reality?
Well, the first step really is city locality buy-in. And at the moment of our three cities we're proposing to do this in, one is on board and the other two are – definitely not on board. They've sort of expressed significant reservations with
and
the plan.
And those three cities are?
Santa Clara, Sunnyvale, and Mountain View. So Sunnyvale and Mountain View are sort of in the either opposed category or waiting to see.
I want to get to more of our calls, and I promise I will, but just a quick follow-up on that, Russell Hancock. I mean, that seems to epitomize your problem.
Mm. We do have this thing called local control. Every community views itself as distinct, perhaps even unique. They will fiercely guard their decision-making ability on that road. A lot of times those decisions will be informed by folks that are on the road itself, car dealers and retailers. And so they will work through this political process to make sure that their own material interests aren't shoved under the bus, to use a metaphor. So that's what's happening. And what's helpful through this Grand Boulevard process is to say, well, let's think more broadly. Let's get some altitude on this problem. Let's think about what it would look like if we were taking a regional approach, if there were, in fact, things like express buses. And so we're trying to bring that kind of advocacy community by community.
And to our call, Susan in Santa Clara joins us next. Susan, go ahead.
Yeah, I actually think the government of Mountain View, Sunnyvale, Santa Clara, et cetera, have more concern for the citizens who live and work in the streets surrounding El Camino. I have lived and worked in the Santa Clara County for 30 years. I'm on the El Camino at least once a day. The three traffic lanes in each direction are absolutely vital. The one thing it does do is it moves traffic as it's supposed to. Yeah, it could be more pretty, but if you reduce the efficiency by 30% by taking out two lanes, that's going to be a huge problem for people who use this road, who live, work, play, and study here, in places where those three lanes are absolutely essential. You can't do that and have this be a success. People don't ride the buses. I've ridden the bus 22, 30 years ago. It's never more than half full. The bus isn't going to do it. People can use the light rail, the Caltrains. People aren't using the buses.
Let's get a response, Susan, to your concern. This takes us right to the nitty-gritty of this. Kevin Conley.
Yeah, Well, I agree that people don't ride the buses, but that's true broadly. They do ride them on El Camino. It is it represents 25% of our overall transit ridership just on that one street. But I agree with the caller's sentiments in the sense of the bus. There's a stigma attached with bus ridership, particularly in a suburbanized, fairly high-income area like ours. And that really is the genesis and the reasoning behind trying to provide it this advantage in terms of a premium type of service, make it faster, make it more comfortable, make it more high-tech. And so that's the idea behind it, the philosophy behind it. In terms of And I can certainly understand the idea that if you take away a lane, you're making it less efficient. But the reality is, in terms of all of our analysis and all our projections, is more people will travel on El Camino in the future with the lane taken away, but they just won't be traveling in cars. You know, there will be a lot more people on transit, a lot more people walking, a lot more people biking, and it really balances the street in terms of all the modes. And I think that's the core philosophy behind the whole Grand Boulevard idea and the boulevard concept in general.
Susan, thanks for the call. Do we know how long the average trip is on El Camino? I mean, if I think about it, what I do, I probably never go on El Camino for longer than maybe 2 miles. I mean, do we know how people use it and what would be beneficial about using it in a way other than that?
You know, I can say my Santa Clara County. I don't know San Mateo. I imagine it's similar.
It's similar.
But the average trip, certainly the average transit trip is 5 to 7 miles, and the average car trip is slightly over that.
Okay. Some thoughts coming in from our listeners. John in San Jose writes, how would the historic aspects of the boulevard be approached? Wouldn't it be best if the trees were native oaks and indigenous plants, if they were replanted, historic buildings restored, historic sites designated and restored? What about that aspect of the current thought on how to preserve what's worth preserving, Russell Hancock?
I think it's a wonderful sentiment, and I think the task force has those sensibilities. We see this as a historic road. We want to celebrate that heritage. That's one half of it. The other half is we also want it to be fabulous looking forward. We think it can be something different than it is. So we're not trying to preserve it as a museum piece. We're trying to celebrate that part, but we're also trying to make it something fresh, something dynamic, something that really reflects our profile.
Here's another comment about El Camino of the past. Lexi writes in, I recently visited Burlingame, where I grew up in the 1960s. The experience was like going back in a time machine. Doesn't seem to have changed at all, except for the loss of a few eucalyptus trees and a new hospital. It's definitely time for an update, Burlingame included, but I do appreciate the tree-lined portions of El Camino. It is one part of the El Camino, Corinne, that has a distinctive look to it. So how do you preserve that narrow section of El Camino and Burlingame with those lovely eucalyptus trees and still have it be forward-looking in the way Russell was describing?
You know, I think there's no question that the width of El Camino and Burlingame is actually the narrowest part of the right-of-way, and that it will remain like that. However, I would like to note that Burlingame does have a high incidence of pedestrian accidents, and so there certainly are improvements that could be done to make it safer.
Jim writes in about the same question. It's a relatively narrow and tree-lined area, but that may choke the grand plan. So is that a balancing point you have to try to figure out?
I don't think it will choke the grand plan. I mean, the plan is that every city will be distinctive. It certainly is an issue relative to transit service. It's an issue right now relative to transit service because there are only 2 lanes in each direction.
Leonard writes in, I grew up in San Jose before Highway 101 replaced El Camino as the way to visit relatives on the peninsula when there were still stretches of orchards between the individual cities. I live in Berkeley now. And I'm wondering if your guests have studied San Pablo Avenue in the East Bay, which is also a state highway, and there is a joint agency there between Alameda and Contra Costa counties. Is that a model, a good model, bad model? Are there ways of considering what's happening there in the East Bay?
We definitely look to the East Bay and to other corridors that are being developed, particularly state highways. I think we have a bigger challenge because we do have 19 cities and 2 counties and 2 transit agencies.
I mean, it's – again, we keep coming back to this problem, but I think about, you know, a single city example in San Francisco where they've tried to create or have thought about creating this bus line on Geary, which is one city – 2 miles. Hasn't happened. You're trying to do 17, how many miles across 19 cities? I mean, is it, I guess I keep coming back to the realistic possibilities here.
I'll speak to that. It is realistic. The only thing that's stopping us is ourselves. If we have this vision, if this is what we want, then we can do it. You have to do it at higher levels of government. You have to create bodies that can deliver these kinds of outcomes. But it can be done.
And back to our calls. George in San Francisco has our next thought. George, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just want everyone in your panel to know that I am absolutely appalled that you guys want to take away the last place, the last bastion where something unexpected can be seen in the Bay Area. I mean, you can see Cold Stone Creameries everywhere. That's not what we want. We don't want an Emeryville. But you can't find an interesting Vietnamese restaurant, an interesting Thai restaurant, an interesting Indian restaurant. And by the way, the immigrant communities in Sunnyvale and Mountain View, that's what they want. They don't want a Cold Stone Creamery. And I just think it's incredible that this discussion is happening in this completely one-sided way. It's all about aesthetics. It's all about Mr. Hancock's aesthetics. I also want to point out that this sort of top-down, you see it my way and we'll make it nice and pristine kind of development has been completely discredited by Jane Jacobs in The Death and Life of American Cities. Everyone knows it doesn't work. You pay lip service to individuality and all that, but in the end, the establishments that can actually pay the property taxes when eminent domain is exercised and the properties are auctioned off, the properties that can pay property taxes and the properties that can command so-called market value are always these chain stores, these horrible chain stores.
Okay, George, I'm gonna hold you there. I take your point. It's a really interesting point. And about sort of making everything kind of aesthetically pleasing, Russell Hancock, everything pastel and taking away from the distinctiveness that George says we need.
We love the distinctiveness of El Camino Real. We want to celebrate that. We want to accentuate that. I don't remember saying anything about a Cold Stone Creamery. The fact is we've got enough of that. What we want to celebrate on El Camino Real is just better design sensibilities so that these kinds of establishments are even more appealing than they are today.
But I think when people like George hear the word design sensibilities, it sounds like everything's going to kind of look sort of faux Spanish mission-y or whatever. I mean, that it's going to look a particular way that all looks swell but takes away from what George is saying.
Well, remember, every one of those decisions will be made by city councils and city planners, and they ultimately exercise the authority on this. So it's whatever those cities elect to do. We want to get them tools, more resources, so that they can think more broadly and more grandly.
Dina Belzer, sorry, you wanted to join in.
Well, I want to be clear that this the implementation on the land use side of the Grand Boulevard will not be done through eminent domain. It will be done through individual development projects done by individual property owners. And I think that Kevin makes a good point about transforming the street, the road itself, and the transit service will not be done incrementally necessarily, although I think some aspects of it will also be incremental. But on the land use side, that's where the incrementalism will happen, and there will be no eminent domain. Individual property owners will do what they want at the time when it makes sense for them financially. And I think that this will allow for the continuing level of spontaneity. A lot of the immigrant community, particularly on the southern part of the corridor, will be able to participate, hopefully. And this is something that the individual cities are taking into consideration. So I don't think anybody is suggesting that this should be done like Haussmann did Paris in the late 19th century. That's why we're talking so much about incrementalism.
I mean, you want, in a sense, more diversity, more life, more vitality, not more similarity. Is that right, Dina?
Exactly. But I think several callers have pointed out that there are important, very positive aspects to the El Camino now. And one of the challenges is to retain what's good and get rid of what's bad. Because as Kevin said earlier, a lot of the El Camino still looks like 1960s, not the cool madman 1960s, but the sort of yucky, homogenous 1960s answer to Cold Stone Creamery. So I think what we're trying to do is exactly look for more diversity and more opportunity for other kinds of things.
Back to our calls. Arthur in Palo Alto is up next. Arthur, go ahead.
Good morning. I'm actually a planning and transportation commissioner for the city of Palo Alto, and we have El Camino design guidelines that we had quite a while, but unfortunately those guidelines do not involve sufficient space in front of the buildings to have a wide enough sidewalk that you need for pedestrian-friendly in a Grand Boulevard design. On the other hand, you have often single-family residences and small housing right behind El Camino, so you have you have these adjacency issues of what you could build in that space.
Arthur, thanks. Thanks for the observation. There's also a problem just with like something as basic as sidewalk continuity. I mean, you can walk along part of El Camino near where I live, and then you're out of sidewalk. I mean, is that part of what you want to change as well?
Absolutely. I mean, we need to address all of these things. It has to happen a city at a time, a block at a time, but hopefully over time you'll get a string of pearls along the road.
Eric, just lost Eric. Sorry about that, Eric. We'll go next to Kathleen in San Mateo. Kathleen, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I was just wondering how this is being proposed to the neighborhoods and to the people, and is this ever going to be put to a vote rather than having bureaucracy just tell us what we're going to get rather than letting the cities decide for themselves. Maybe it should be put to the vote of the voters.
Yep. Great question, Kathleen. Russell?
I'm happy to address that. You know, the Grand Boulevard Initiative is not a grand conspiracy to impose things on cities. Can't do that. It's just a task force of people up and down the roadway. The ultimate decision-making authority rests with the cities. Every city council will decide what they want to do on their road. They will address every development proposal as it comes to them, and that'll be through the open democratic process. The Grand Boulevard Initiative is just trying to put a vision out there of what we think the road can be and try to elevate our sites.
Kathleen, thanks for the call. A couple of other emailed comments. Thomas writes in, glad you brought up this topic. Frequently when we drive through El Camino, the subject is how terrible it is from lights to traffic to abandoned car lots and aging buildings. I want to bring up also sign ordinances need to take place, and we need to remove billboards in the area. So that's Thomas's to-do list for El Camino. Carl writes in, as a cyclist, I see El Camino as a barrier. I constantly try to determine the safest intersection to cross. We haven't talked much about bicycling, but is there bicycle lanes? Is that part of what you want to see accomplished as well, Corinne?
I can talk about San Mateo County. Our countywide bicycle plan has parallel routes to El Camino, and that was the decision of each of the cities. One of the big issues is that it may be posted at 35 miles per hour, but it is designed for cars to go much faster. And so the conundrum that we're in is, we want to accommodate cyclists, but do we want to encourage people to be in potentially unsafe situations?
A number of emails keep coming in about synchronized lights. Can anyone address that? That seems to be sort of the pet peeve of the morning.
Well, you know, I can say in Santa Clara County in 2005, we resynchronized the lights. They originally were synchronized. And over time, this is for signalization 101, but over time, synchronization starts to break down. As new projects come online, new signals come online, things get retimed. In 2005, we retimed all the lights, and we did a study afterwards that showed that traffic was actually moving much better in 2005. Over time, that's kind of degraded a little bit, and we have a new plan in 2014 to actually have a new plan for that, but it does take that kind of constant maintenance. And I think put this back to the big picture, that is one of the arguments against Caltrans' ownership and operation of the road, is that they just haven't paid enough attention to the road from the perspective of the locality.
Let's squeeze in one more quick call. Eva Maria, go ahead, please, quickly if you can.
Yes, I will try. For each city along El Camino, please plant different trees so one knows where one is.
Great. So, you know, Palo Alto, it's whatever tree, and Menlo Park the next.
Correct.
Wonderful
correct.
Idea. Eva, thank you. Here are a few more ideas. Anthony writes in, what I want is a walkable, bikeable, beautiful connecting highway. I want trees, street furniture, and wide sidewalks. And Nick writes in, my word for El Camino is critical. I'm on El Camino right now. The highways are crazy on days like these, and it provides a safe alternative. Adding a bus lane only would not serve a high enough percentage of people. And one more thought, which we haven't really talked about just quickly on this point, someone wants to address the fact that as our population ages, that we need a different kind of El Camino. Thoughts on that, Russell?
It's a good point. We are an aging population, and that population is showing very clearly to the marketplace that they're favoring a kind of lifestyle that doesn't have the automobile at the center. They want to live in walkable communities, do their shopping on a daily basis. El Camino has to be the kind of location where that becomes a reality.
We just have a moment left, so we're going to end with word association again. And Dina, over the course of this hour, where are you with the word that you would like to most describe the future of El Camino?
Exciting.
All right. Corinne, your last thought.
Hopeful.
Hopeful. All right. And Kevin Conley, where would you go?
I go with the Corinne's opportunity. I think it's there.
And Russell, your last thoughts as the co-chair of this grand initiative.
We can do this. People look at the landscape around them and they say it's ugly. Who's to blame? Well, it's actually us. We need to hold ourselves to a higher standard. This is how it's going to happen.
Russell Hancock, President and CEO of Joint Venture Silicon Valley Network, co-chair of the Grand Boulevard Task Force. Thanks for being with us. Thanks also to Kevin Conley, Transit Planning Manager for Santa Clara Valley, Dina Belzer, President of Strategic Economics, Corinne Goodrich, Manager of Strategic Development for San Mateo County Transit District. Thanks all for being part of our program. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi and Judy Campbell. Amanda Stupai is our engagement producer. Danny Bringer is our engineer today. Dan Zoll, our senior editor. And Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.